Welcome to the Connect with County Leaders podcast with your host, Brian Hill, County Executive of Fairfax County, Virginia. Connect with County Leaders gives listeners a chance to hear County Executive Hill discussing the county's priorities, opportunities, and issues with leaders from around the county.
Hello and welcome to Connect with County Leaders. My name is Brian Hill. On this edition of the podcast, it is my esteemed pleasure to welcome Earl Stafford Sr., founder of the Stafford Foundation and previously chairman and CEO of Unitech. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there's guests and there's guests. And you have been such a staunch supporter of me during my career here. When things were going well, you said, just make sure you understand that things also will not go well. And that's what I'm going to watch you on. And those words resonated with me. And it's a pleasure to have you here with me today. So I'm going to get right into this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your remarkable career in the background and your early life and how you came to be where you are today?
What a question. I was born in Mount Holly, New Jersey, one of those George Washington slept here towns in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. My father was a part-time Baptist minister and a laborer at Campbell Soup Company. My mother was a domestic. I was one of 12 children, although we all weren't in the house at the same time and doing that. But had a wonderful childhood in New Jersey, a small community where everyone knew each other and did those type of things. And went to high school there and didn't go to college immediately after high school. I enlisted in the Air Force. This is during the Vietnam War era. And I enlisted in the Air Force. And it turned out to be one of the best decisions I had made. Mm-hmm. It forced me to grow up, so during that period. But did that, remained in the military for 20 years, retired, and then went into private sector.
So you say Mount Holly, New Jersey. So that's what, exit 5, exit 6, somewhere around?
You know New Jersey well. Yeah, that's how we locate each other via exits.
So a Philly or a Giant fan?
I'm a Commanders fan.
Thank you. All right. I just had to put that out there for everybody.
I found out about 10 years ago. I was at a Eagles game, and my wife was jumping up and down, and I found out she was an Eagles fan. So I threatened to call my lawyer, but we worked things out.
I understand, sir. I understand. So you spoke about going into the military. How did that impact your career in business as you moved out of the military and into the business world?
Well, as I mentioned, I didn't go to college immediately after high school, went into the military, and there were great educational opportunities that I was able to take advantage of. At the end of my first enlistment, I had accumulated some college courses, and I re-enlisted and got more. And during my second hitch, I took a test somehow. I didn't know what I was doing. And I was offered a full scholarship to go to college and full-time and get paid. So I took advantage of that and attended the University of Massachusetts and stayed in. And after that, I was able to earn an MBA, which helped spur my interest into private industry.
So military, went to school on maybe a GI Bill or however you did that, got your MBA.
Got my MBA.
And then you start Unitech. Is that correct?
I did. Immediately afterwards, that was a difficult period at that time, and people would wonder why you would do that. My background in the military, technically, I was in air traffic control. I was an air traffic control officer, communications officer. Got to Washington in 1982, right after the air traffic control strike, if you remember when President Reagan fired the controllers who walked out. And so I was assigned to FAA headquarters as the assistant liaison officer with the Air Force. And that's how I got to Washington.
So it's an interesting path, you know, New Jersey, military, University of Massachusetts, Lowell.
Amherst,
Unitech. And now you're the Wentworth Found. You started a private equity and financial consulting firm called the Wentworth Group. You're like, all right, tech, finance, all over, which is great. Because I want our listeners to understand that we just don't have to be put in little placards and place cards. We can be universal. And you are the epitome of universal, going from IT to financial back to IT. So tell us, why Wentworth?
Well, I sold the company Unitech, I hold, to Lockheed Martin. They did a preemptive strike, knew I was interested in selling, and made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and did that. And then I decided, was trying to decide what I wanted to do after that in business. Mm-hmm. And somehow this private equity thing struck me, much more difficult than I thought it was. Okay. We're doing some things, but we pretty much have wound that down and I'm fully retired. But that's one of the great things about this country. There are so many opportunities that allows one to pursue. And there are issues that we have. We're not a perfect country, but I don't know if I've been able to do the things that I've been blessed to do not living here in the United States.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. Totally. Being, you know, I grew up in, was born in London, England, but I grew up in New Jersey also. I was 18 W. So that's the connection. Yeah, that's the connection that we have. There is the North and the South in New Jersey.
That's right.
Once you pass exit 13.
Yeah, you're South.
There you go. But, you know, how did your faith dictate the way you structured your business and your giving? Because you are very philanthropic.
Well, I my faith is the foundation of all I seek to do.
Mm-hmm.
There should be no difference between what you believe and how you live your life. And it's the underpinnings of all the decisions that I try to make in life, not being perfect by any means, but my faith in Jesus Christ, I'm not ashamed to say that anywhere, is the basis for my decision-making, my pursuits.
So when you say that, and then you go back to all your career advances, what was the biggest struggles that you faced in business?
Well, I would say, we started Unitech. I was dead broke, and we struggled. I put my my house up for collateral for a loan, so I had to get out of bed in the morning and do that. And things started happening. Mm-hmm. And if you'll recall back, I think it was 1991, the Hubble Space Telescope was launched, and the center is up at Goddard Space Center in Greenbelt. Mm-hmm. And we were able to get a small menial portion of that. Real quickly, I had about 20 employees. Things were going well. I had another consulting contract in aviation, and I had another small contract. And I think that was in June, July 1981, somewhere in that time period. And as you will recall, when the Hubble launched, it immediately had focusing problems.
That's right.
And at that time, NASA immediately laid off most of the contractors involved in support there. At the same time, that same week, I got a call from a contract, one of my other main contracts, that they were terminating it immediately. And I pretty much went from 20-some employees down to nothing at that point. And things got tough. Things got tough.
That was obviously one of your biggest challenges. But for entrepreneurs today, they might not be expecting. What kind of challenges would they might not be expecting in your view?
I think everyone knows that capital is critical in entrepreneurship, and access to capital is critical. I don't think many entrepreneurs realize how critical having access to capital is, mm-hmm. not only in starting up and those things, but also for contingencies, mm-hmm. because in business, stuff will happen that you had no idea, will have no idea. So capital is critical.
You know, that's a great parallel of what I do here in the Fairfax County. I have to have what we call a fund balance, which is my capital.
Sure.
So I have to build up a financial portfolio to ensure for the COVID, mm-hmm. or the recession or DOGE and things as such. But how can local government and private business work together to improve people's lives? Because that's essentially what we have to do going forward.
It's a collaboration. I was raised to build, and I had a mentor or two in business, Dr. Al Nashman, who ran the Computer Science Corporation, somehow took a liking and provided that. One of the things that he instilled in me is that we as a company, even as an individual, have a social responsibility. We have a responsibility to the community and the environment in which we thrive in. And we have to be collaborative, working with government, other agencies to ensure that the community that we profit in, that we prosper in, that we also give back to, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense because we have One Fairfax, Access and Equity for All, championed by our chairman, our current chairman, Jeff McKay, and former Board of Supervisor, Kathy Hudgens, who passed away, rest in peace. They came up with a rubric of what we want One Fairfax to look like, where we imparted a strategic plan to operationalize that concept. And then, you know, as you know, you and I have known, we go around trying to be as philanthropic as we possibly can as government, but we do have guardrails. It's really, really important for us to make sure that everybody has access and equity for all things. So when I say that to you, what's most important in maintaining Fairfax status as a hub for innovation and business? Because it's all about people. And we need people, we need schools, but what do you view is the most important nuance to that, to getting us to there?
Educating our people. We probably have one of the best educational systems in the entire world. However, I find that we still educate to tradition. We educate to the past. And the world is moving and changing at such a pace that somehow we have to train our young people and educate them for the future, for the innovation that's happening. Our young people graduate from high school perhaps and go to college, but they know algebra, they know math, which are they're important, science, biology, government, civics, and those kind of things. But somehow we have to better prepare them and our people for what's happening in the world today and tomorrow.
Okay. So when you say that, I'm going to ask you about the People's Inaugural Project and what was the most impactful moment for you during that time?
I got a vision in March of 2008 that I should do something for the upcoming election to help the underserved, the marginalized, whatever term you like. In March of 2008, even before the primaries, and we knew who was going to represent the Democrats or the Republicans, I committed to that, and I got the presidential suite at the Hay Adams Hotel. My vision was to take someone homeless who normally wouldn't participate, have a party, watch a parade, and you go home. Life is good. Something happened in October of that same year where I came home and I found out that there was an opportunity at the Marriott Hotel to take over much of the hotel and during the inauguration. And the Lord spoke to me that I should do this and bring in the underserved, the homeless, the wounded veterans, battered women. And that's what we did during that time.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I don't like to brag on you, but you were also appointed by President Obama to serve as a member of the Board of Trustees for the Woodrow Wilson International Center of Scholars. Share with us your experience leading the policy discussions on the global issues, because we have a lot of global issues today. I think I'm going to ask that you go back to helping us get this world back in order.
I was honored by the president. Previously, he had appointed me to the Board of Governors for the Historically Black Colleges and Universities. And then I got a phone call asking if I would be willing to change and serve on the Woodrow Wilson Center, International Center for Scholars. And I wasn't really familiar, but when I found out what their mission was and what they did, I was excited about that. And I think I came away with more than I ever contributed there.
Okay.
Because I became aware of what the issues are politically, non-politically, socially, economically, globally, and the work that needs to be done there.
You know, this has been a riveting conversation with you because we've talked about innovation. We've talked about politics. We've talked about faith. But I want to ask you one question about family. So last Father's Day, something happened with a tribute. Could you tell me about that tribute at your church last Father's Day?
You did your research well.
I try my best, sir.
I attend the Alfred Street Baptist Church in Alexandria, Virginia, and serve as a deacon there. And I was asked to be one of the participants to speak for Father's Day. And reluctantly, I did. And before going to the podium, there was a video introduction that my family with the church had put together. And my grandchildren, my children, my wife, and they had put together this video to introduce me and tell some things that I wasn't quite certain that they should have shared, but they did, and it caught me off guard. I typically don't get caught off guard like that.
I know, and that's why I had to ask that question here today. But, you know, Stafford, I got to say, during Black History Month, we were trying to make an impactful message to our next generation, our community. Cultural and business leaders, we're trying to make an impactful message. Mm-hmm. What would you say to the listeners today about the importance of Black History Month?
I think Carter G. Woodson, 1926, started that mm-hmm. as Negro History Week, and it grew into Black History Month, and I think that's wonderful. We should celebrate Black history every month, every year,
that's
every
right.
day of the year. And that's important. And the reason I say that is because we're finding out, and that's one of the benefits that I had in serving on the council at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. I had always studied history, ancestry, and things of that nature. But I've come to find out that we as African Americans have made contributions that heretofore I had not been aware of. There are many things that have been not included in history books that I wish that I had known years earlier. And so I think that's important. One of the reasons I'm excited and to be a part of the African American Museum is not to proclaim anything against anyone, but to share how inclusive we were, how contributing we were in making this country to what it is. That's exciting to me.
Mr. Stafford, I want to say thank you for taking time out today to be with me and to be with the residents of Fairfax County. Thank you for all the work you're doing from the past, today, and into the future. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This has been the Connect with County Leaders podcast with Fairfax County Executive Brian Hill. To listen to other great Fairfax County podcasts, visit fairfaxcounty.gov/podcasts. And for additional audio content, tune in to Fairfax County Government Radio at fairfaxcounty.gov/radio. For more Fairfax County news and event information, visit News Center Online at fairfaxcounty.gov/news. The Connect with County Leaders podcast is produced by the Fairfax County, Virginia government.